The flickering flames threw everything into chaotic relief, into distorted patterns of light and shadow. Shadow that would hold her secrets, she hoped. Irsa's left knee bounced at a feverish pace, her chin in her palm and her fingers tapping her cheek. We should go. No. Shahrzad did not move her lips, nor did she look her sister's way. Not yet. A steady stream of men trickled from the sheikh's tent toward the immense blaze in the center of the encampment. As they took their places beside the fire, the men passed around pitchers of spiced wine with a liberal ease, an ease that spoke of recent discord and a pressing need to forget. Apparently, their war council had not gone well, and though Shahrzad was eager to discover why, she was not foolish enough to believe anyone would tell her. Instead, she watched the galyan coals being placed atop an iron brazier, while a gnarled-fingered old man packed several water pipes with sweet-smelling moiselle. Their silk-wrapped hoses were kept carefully coiled beyond the reach of any sparks. A group of young women sat beside the towering galyans, giggling amongst themselves as they waited for the coals to catch flame. Their bright-colored shaminas hung loose about their shoulders, shielding their backs from the cool breeze of a desert night as the fire bathed the air before them in bristling heat. Rahim lumbered from the depths of the Badawi sheikh's tent. His face crimped into a scowl, Tariq on his heels. Without once breaking his stride, Tariq took up a pitcher of spiced wine and knocked it back. He wiped his mouth with his free hand, then moved toward the fire, the pitcher dangling from his fingertips. As always, Tariq wore his every emotion like ill-advised regalia. Sadness, frustration, anger, bitterness, longing. For the first time, Shahrzad seriously considered fleeing, but instead lifted her chin and met Tariq's gaze. Again, he did not falter, nor did he look away. Shahrzad barely noticed when Rahim dropped beside Irsa, stirring up a cloud of sparks and grousing all the while. Though it took a great deal of effort, Shahrzad managed to curb her desire to pull away when Tariq took his place to her right, too close to be mistaken for a friend, his shoulder pressed against hers and a hand resting in the sand behind her, positioned with a cocky, proprietorial air. Her body tensed, her eyes tapered to slits. She wanted to rail against him and shove him away. Tariq knew better. He knew how much she loathed this kind of behavior. But she could not mistake the change around her, the circling wolves, the eyes of judgment that had been upon her, continued their silent appraisal, but their hostility had diminished, as though Tariq had willed it so. While Shahrzad resented the insinuation that Tariq Imran al-Ziyad was her saving grace, she could not deny this change. They listened to him. Was Tariq the one behind the attack in Ray? Had he dispatched the Fidai assassins to her bedchamber that night? He could not have done such a thing. No, even though Tariq despised Khalid, his love for her would bar him from resorting to such violence, from putting her at such risk, from hiring mercenaries and assassins to achieve his goals. Wouldn't it? A flare of doubt formed in Shahrzad's chest. She banished it with a breath. Shahrzad had to believe in the boy she'd known and loved for so long. Beside her, Irsa's leg continued its nervous twitching. Just when Shahrzad had decided she had to put an end to it, before it drove her mad, Rahim reached for Irsa's knee. "You're shaking your luck away, Irsa al-Khayzuran." He squeezed her knee still. "And we might need it soon." His eyes drifted back toward the still-emptying tent, back to the site of the recent war council and its unspoken meaning. Rahim's hand did not leave Irsa's knee. Flickering firelight or no, Shahrzad could see the tinge of pink on her sister's skin, and the odd slant of Rahim's lips as he glanced down into the sand.
Dear God, Irsa and Rahim?
Sherazad snatched the pitcher from Tariq's hand. The heat from the fire had warmed the wine, had heightened the spiciness of the cloves and cinnamon, the bite of the ginger, the rich sweetness of the honey, and the sharp citrus of the cardamom. It tasted strong and delicious, heady and potent. She swallowed more of it than she should have. Shazi. It wasn't an admonition, it was a warning. When she glanced at Tariq, he was staring at her sidelong, his thick eyebrows set low across his forehead. "Why are you permitted to drink to your heart's content, yet I am not?" she countered, clearing her throat of the wine sting. Tariq reached for the pitcher. "Because I have nothing to prove."
"Ass!"
She held it just beyond his grasp. "You are not my keeper, no matter how much you may wish it." Though she'd meant the words as a rejoinder, she regretted them the instant they passed her lips, for she saw Tariq draw back into himself.
"I thank the stars for that," he said in a hollow tone.
Sherazad leaned closer, wanting to apologize, but uncertain of how best to do so. Without warning, Tariq snaked his arm around her. His hand shot forward, his long fingers taking hold of the pitcher.
"Let go of it this instant, or I'll dump its contents on your head and leave you to wallow in honeyed misery," he whispered in her ear, his amusement as plain as his threat.
Sherazad froze, his breath tickling her skin.
"Do it, and I'll bite your hand," she said, "until you scream like a little boy."
He laughed, a rich susurrus of air and sound.
"I thought you were tired of bloodshed. Perhaps I'll toss you over my shoulder, in front of everyone."
Refusing to comply without a fight, she pinched his forearm until he grimaced.
"This isn't over."
Nevertheless, Sherazad relinquished the pitcher. Tariq grinned.
"It never is."
He took a celebratory swallow of wine. Though she'd ceded this battle, a small part of her felt lightened by the exchange. It was the first time in almost a week, indeed the first time since they'd left Ray, that they'd spoken to each other without the hint of anguish hanging in the air between them, without her betrayal in the forefront of their minds. It also marked the first occasion Sherazad believed their friendship might survive all that had transpired. This newfound hope easing the weight on her heart, Sherazad looked up at the starlit sky above. It was a deep blue, with a crescent moon wrapped in a fleece of passing clouds. The sky seemed to stretch on without end, its horizon curving to meet the sand on either side. Its blinking stars were a study in contrasts, some flashing in merriment, others winking in wicked suggestion. The stars in Ray were never so bright. For a moment, Sherazad was reminded of something her father used to say.
"The darker the sky, the brighter the stars."
Just as she began to drift into thoughtful solitude, a burst of nearby laughter jarred her into awareness. The young women sitting beside the galyans were being entertained by a host of young men with pitchers of spiced wine.
"Despite the old sheikh's request tonight, it matters not where we set up camp. What matters is that we're close to laying siege to Ray,"
an inebriated young man proclaimed.
"And when we do, I will be the first to piss on the grave of Khalid ibn al-Rashid."
He lifted his pitcher skyward. The girls tittered. One stifled a cackle. The other young men joined in the toast, their pitchers raised high and their voices raised even higher. Their shared joy was like the tip of a cold blade against Sherazad's spine.
"That monster doesn't deserve a grave," another young man chimed in. "His head belongs on a pike. He'll be lucky if we offer him a dram of water before we sever it from his body."
A rousing chorus of approval.
After he murdered those innocent young girls, a clean death is too good for him. I say we tear him apart and leave him for the carrion crows. Better still if he continues to draw breath while the crows pick at him. At this next cheer, the group of men grew in number, as more were drawn to the clamor like bees to nectar. The blood roared through Sherzad's body. The tiny hairs on her skin stood straight up. Khalid. With nothing but their drunken threats, these foolish boys had managed to burn brutal images onto her mind. Brutal images that would not soon be forgotten. Her strong, proud king. Her beautiful, broken monster. The boy she loved beyond words. Torn to pieces. She would never let them near Khalid. She would say whatever lie needed to be said, exist beneath hate-filled waters forever, until she drowned in their enmity, if need be. It was not fear that drove her to such reckless thoughts. It was fury. I will destroy the next one who dares to speak, the next one to utter his name. She could feel Tariq's eyes on her, like the eyes of the wolves about the fire. He pulled her close, tried to shield her, not simply out of concern, but out of pity. She knew it the instant she felt his hand in her hair, smoothing it from her face, silently assuring her of... Let's ask the White Falcon, the first young man turned to Tariq, the supposed leader of our host. The men around him did not even bother to hide their amusement at the slight. How would you like to see the monster meet his end? Tariq stiffened at the taunt, then relaxed. He tilted his head back, affecting a look of ease. His fingers ran through Sherzad's dark waves, in full view of those around them. Please show me you are not driven solely by hatred, Tariq. Show me there is honor behind your actions, that I can still reach you. I am not necessarily in agreement. Tariq began in a solicitous tone that managed to quiet the restless din around them. For I do think Khalid ibn al-Rashid deserves a dram of water. Sherzad's pulse slowed in time with her breath as Tariq held up a hand against a slew of protests. And his body deserves a proper burial. Again, he silenced the crowd with a gesture. After I put his head on a pike for all the world to see. The sound of the cheering was lost in the bitter rage echoing through Sherzad's ears, the strangled screams of a wrecked heart. As the men continued carrying on with their pitchers and their puffs on the galleons around them, Tariq handed Sherzad his spiced wine, his expression bleak, vaguely apologetic, yet determined. Sherzad drank, staring into the fire, watching it burn her newfound hope to ash. I don't need your help. Sherzad pushed Tariq away, then proceeded to lurch to one side. A likely story, you awful girl. He threaded his arms across his chest, watching Sherzad sway through the Bedouin camp on unsteady feet in the opposite direction of her tent. Tariq was honestly surprised she was able to remain upright at all. Even hours later, he still felt impeded by the effects of the wine, and he'd never known Sherzad to drink spirits of any kind before. By all rights, Tariq knew he should fall down laughing at his current predicament. The irony, shackled to the one person he hoped to avoid. This was not at all how he'd wished to end the night. He'd hoped the wine would dull his frustrations. With Sherzad and his uncle's continued evasions, with the soldiers' veiled taunts as to his irrelevance, it was becoming clearer every day that he was nothing beyond a name. After all, when had his uncle given him anything more than nominal power? Tariq felt uneasy around these men who were willing to destroy what remained of Ray without question, willing to shed innocent blood for their cause. Blood Tariq was not ready to spill. When Sherzad pitched to one side again, Tariq shot forward and caught her, though the sudden motion nearly launched him into the sand. Fighting for balance, he reached for a nearby pole,
its waning torchlight glowing thinly around them.
I told you I don't need your help,
she slurred, though she gripped at his camis in an attempt to stand straight. Her delicate hands were against his chest. She smelled of spiced wine and springtime. Her hair was a tangle of invitation. Everything about her was utterly beguiling, enchanting in that way only she could be, a girl who wielded her wiles without intent, a girl who, despite his wiser inclinations, ensnared him still. When she peered up at Tariq with a question on her perfect lips, it was all he could do not to answer it with a kiss.
"Was it you?" she whispered.
"What?" Tariq said, shaken from his trance. Sherazade grasped tightly the linen near his throat.
"Did you send the fidaïs?"
"What are you talking about?"
"You wouldn't do that, would you? No matter how much you hated him, you wouldn't do that to me."
She clenched the fabric even tighter, a plaintive note in her voice. He blinked, trying to clear his mind of the wine's lasting haze.
"Shazi, you have too much honor for that."
She shook her head while looking away, as though she were speaking to herself.
"I could never love a boy without honor."
"Yet you love him." Tariq's rancor could not be missed. Nor could he miss the opportunity to strike out at her. Sherazade's eyes focused on his. For a moment, he saw the heat of anger shine through the muddle of colors.
"Khalid has honor, Tariq, if you'd only..."
"I don't want to hear you make excuses for him." Tariq shoved off the pole, determined to return Sherazade to her tent and be done with this night once and for all. She stumbled after him.
"If you would just listen..."
A group of soldiers rounded the corner, stalking into the light. Judging by their comportment, Tariq guessed they were intoxicated, but they didn't seem to be glad of it. They seemed to be looking for something, their shoulders caged, their fists at their sides. The type of drunks on the hunt for a fight. Tariq pulled Sherazade back against the pole, concealing her in what appeared to be a lover's embrace. He made certain to stand just beyond the weak circle of radiance cast by the torchlight. When Sherazade raised a half-hearted protest, Tariq muffled her words against his chest. Better the soldiers not see her. Better these men on a hunt for a fight not find their match in the young Khalifa of Khorasan. For it was unlikely Sherazade would be gracious with them, either. Her body slackened against his as they waited for the soldiers to pass. The desire for battle was slowly leaving her as the wine continued to exert its influence. When she rested against him and he saw her eyes flutter closed, Tariq took a deep breath. The ache of loss for something not yet gone was sharp, sharper than anything he'd ever felt before.
"You need to sleep," he murmured.
Tariq exhaled, mentally cursing himself. "I'll take you to your tent." Her head slumped forward in a nod.
"Check their arms."
"What?"
"Look for the scarab," she said. "Don't trust the scarab."
"I won't." He rolled his eyes, glancing over his shoulder to make certain the soldiers were out of sight. Then he lifted Sherazade from the sand, nearly thrown off kilter by her weight, slight though it was. The wine did him no favors. Staving off its effects, Tariq staggered toward her tent. Her arms circled around his neck.
"I'm very sorry, you know."
Tariq could hardly hear her. "For what?" Again, he almost laughed at the absurdity of her apology. Now, of all times.
"That you have to see me and do this. It isn't your pl-"
Her eyes flew open, the crown of her head almost smacking him in the jaw.
"Where is Irsa?"
"With Rahim." Irritation marred her brow.
"I shall beat him to death's doorstep, make no mistake."
"What?"
"That gangly imbecile,"
she mumbled, her cheek falling against his chest.
I won't stand for it. I'll send the Rajput after him. He'll chase him down with his fiery talwar.
With a shake of his head, Tariq pushed through the opening of Sherzad's tent, nearly dropping her in the process. He left the tent flap wide, allowing the moonlight to brighten the relentless dark of the space. True to form, Irsa al-Khayzuran's bedroll was neatly bundled and stacked to one side. Shazi had not bothered to put hers away. It remained in the center of the small tent, her blanket askew, her pillow bunched in a fitful heap. With barely concealed amusement, Tariq placed Shazi on her bedroll, not even bothering to drag her blanket across her body. She stirred when he tried to lift her pillow.
Don't!
She put a hand on his arm, her eyes slivering open. Or what? He whispered, his lips twitching. Empty threats do not move me, Shazi Jan. She wrinkled her nose, then curled into a ball, pressing a palm to her forehead. Again, he tried to lift her pillow and place it beneath her head. After a time, he realized the futility of such efforts and decided the best course of action was to let her sleep off her stupor. As Tariq moved to stand, he noticed a piece of parchment that had fallen from the folds of Sherzad's clothing, most likely jarred loose when he nearly dropped her. He lifted it into the moonlight. It was creased in the manner of something that had been folded and unfolded numerous times, something with contents that mattered a great deal to someone. He glanced down at Sherzad's sleeping form, wavered for the span of a breath, then unfolded the parchment. Shazi, I prefer the color blue to any other. The scent of lilacs in your hair is a source of constant torment. I despise figs. Lastly, I will never forget all the days of my life, the memories of last night. For nothing, not the sun, not the rain, not even the brightest star in the darkest sky, could begin to compare to the wonder of you, Khalid. With great care, Tariq refolded the letter along its creases, his fingers longing to crush it in his fists, to tear it asunder, to burn it into non-existence. He knew Sherzad loved the Boy King. He'd known it since Ray, and he'd known the Boy King cared about Sherzad. But he had not known the Boy King truly loved her. Despite what the captain of the guard had said the night of the storm, Tariq had not wanted to believe the murdering madman capable of loving anything or anyone. At least not in a way Tariq could ever understand. This? Tariq understood. Completely. In a rather short letter, the Caliph of Khorasan had managed to put to words exactly how Tariq had always felt about the only girl he'd ever loved. Had always felt, but never managed to say with quite such simple eloquence. These were not the words of a madman. For the first time, Tariq saw what Sherzad saw when she looked at Khalid ibn al-Rashid. He saw a boy who loved a girl more than anything in the world, and he hated him all the more for it. Boundless. Sherzad paid dearly for her silly show of bravado with the spiced wine. She spent the better part of the next morning with her face in a basin, emptying her stomach of its contents. Her insides were a jumble of knots. The dullest stream of light made her wince. There were moments she swore the very roots of her hair howled in protest. Were it not for Irsa, Sherzad felt certain these symptoms would have endured all day. When Sherzad complained of feeling as though she were on a rolling ship in the midst of a storm, Irsa rummaged through her neat little pile of things and unraveled an old scroll. After scanning its contents, Irsa left their tent and returned with a tonic brewed from ground ginger root and the peel of a dried lemon. Though Sherzad protested at first, the concoction smelled quite strong and tasted rather bitter. She could not deny it helped in settling her stomach. At Irsa's behest,
Scheherazade remained in their tent, nursing her wounds and forcing down more of the bitter tonic. Ordinarily, she would have disliked wasting an entire day in bed while Irsa sat at their low table, transcribing scrolls by the light of an oil lamp. But on this particular day, Scheherazade did not protest. For on this day, these circumstances suited her just fine. If everyone thought her ill, they would be even more likely to leave her to her own devices. Even more likely not to notice when she snuck out after dark, with her magic carpet in tow. It was time to find Musa Zaragoza. Time to see what she and the magic carpet could do. In stealthy silence, Scheherazade tucked her dagger into her waistband and skirted past her sleeping sister. She secured a shamina about her shoulders before grabbing the magic carpet. Once outside, she stayed to the tent shadows, her heart beating like a caged bird. If someone found her creeping about at night, only days after her arrival, they would suspect her of trying to flee or perpetrating something more insidious. It would not help quell the suspicions those in the camp harbored against her. And it would be even worse if she came across another boy like Taimur. Her skin crawled at the thought. With careful steps, Scheherazade moved between patches of darkness, avoiding any stretches of light. Her gaze went to the sentry posts she'd noted the night before. She allowed herself to breathe freely when she cleared the edges of the Bedouin camp and strode into the endless sweep of sand beyond. As luck would have it, she'd chosen a night without wind, a night in which every sound she made would be distinct. If she fell or yelped or did anything that might attract attention, her secret would be a secret no more. Her detractors would have proof their doubts were rooted in fact. And they might send her away, along with her injured father and her innocent sister. At the very least, they'd find Scheherazade alone in the desert, with a dagger and a rug. Everyone would suspect her of treachery. They would be unlikely to leave her to her own devices again. It could not be helped. She had waited long enough. Though her first instinct was to go to Khalid, Scheherazade knew it would only be more difficult to leave Rey once she returned. And now was not the time to place her wants above the needs of her family, especially the needs of her father. Scheherazade had to find Musa. After Baba, he was the only person she knew with any aptitude for magic. It might be beyond the realm of possibility, but perhaps he would know how to help her father, or how to break a terrible curse. She wandered farther into the desert, trying to find a place where a rise of sand would conceal her from prying eyes. Soon, Scheherazade came across a large dune that should suit her needs. Still, she felt silly when she unfurled the threadbare carpet onto the silken sand. She took a step back, reconsidered the small rectangle of tattered wool. What am I doing? How ridiculous. This is utterly ridiculous. Her gaze hardened. I'm being a goose. Shiva would not approve of such indecision, nor would Khalid. Her eyes fell shut. You are boundless. There is nothing you can't do. His words in her ears, Scheherazade removed her sandals and threaded them through her tikka sash. Then she secured her braid a final time and sat on the carpet. There was no time for her to worry further about the ridiculousness of this endeavor. No time for anything at all, really. Scheherazade had thought she would need to press her hands to the rug's surface. But as soon as her bare feet grazed the worn wool, the sensation around her heart flared, warm and bright. Oh! She cried softly as she dropped onto the carpet, her knees to her chest. The feeling flashed through her limbs with a sudden burning brilliance. The carpet lifted into the air, its corners curving upward. It hovered above the sand, rising like a kite on an errant breeze. Two emotions battled within Scheherazade. The first was fear. The second, she would not yet dare name. As the carpet continued its slow rise, the warmth flooded through Sherzad's body, into her arms and legs, through the very tips of her fingers. It tingled in her nose and pulsed along the ridges of her ears. Power, of a kind she'd never known before. When she looked down again, she was high above the silver sands, as high as the highest turret of Telecon. The fear remained, but it was soon surpassed by that other as yet unnamed emotion. Before she even had a chance to consider it, she knew with an innate kind of certainty how to direct the carpet, as a fish born in water knows how to swim. Let it take you where your heart longs to be. Home to Khalid. Sherzad gripped the carpet tight with determination. No, take me to Musa Zaragoza, she whispered. The prickling warmth around her heart blazed brightly, then seared through the rest of her, tearing another cry from her lips, along with an unexpected smile. The carpet swooped in a lazy arc, rising even higher, to the height of the highest parapet of Ray. As soon as it turned, it took off into a light-studded sky. The world below her disappeared in a rush of flickering fire. Fear lost its battle. Exhilaration won. Sherzad laughed into the night, a current of air at her feet. She rose onto her knees, let her arms spread wide in the wind, let the whistling chill wash over and past her, but not through her. Never through her. Never for a moment did she think the carpet would let her fall. She was the water in the tumbler, swirling and dancing to a music she alone could hear. And up here, higher than she'd ever thought she could be, the wind blew alongside her, while all else vanished in a blur. Still, there was no fear, for up here, Sherzad chased the wind. The ground did not exist, nor did the sky. Here, she was truly boundless. Fear would never overtake her again. The Boy by the Sea. Sherzad flew over the desert toward a mountain range. When she saw the sea sparkling on the horizon, her eyes widened in shock. She'd traveled an astonishing distance in a rather short amount of time. The magic carpet began to slow as it neared a low promontory, overlooking a pale strip of sand. The moon still hung high in the sky, its shifting light glancing over receding waves. A lace of foam collected along the shore. Sherzad took a deep breath. The air was thick and heavy, filled with the tang of salt. As the carpet circled above the cliff, a pillared structure with a dome of brindled stone emerged from behind a wall of gray rock. Marble columns, capped by tongues of fire, stood sentry at the corners. A wide set of stairs descended to a rectangular pool of water near the edge of the promontory. The magic carpet floated alongside the pool, poised just above a smooth stone rise. Sherzad eased a bare foot off the woolen surface, and the carpet landed with a careful woof. She donned her sandals and made a slow scan of her surroundings. The pool was enclosed on two sides by rows of cusped arches. Between those arches were marble statues of men and women pouring gilded streams of water or wielding strange contraptions Sherzad had never seen before. One was an orb filled with what appeared to be swirls of fire, or perhaps it was wind? Another looked to be spinning a vortex made of sand. Burning incense rose from squat copper pots flanking the pool. Blue-gray smoke seeped into the air above them, the scent of peppery sweet myrrh strong. Set against the tan stone was a mosaic border of bright blue lapis lazuli. Sherzad rolled up the rug with care. She strapped it to her back using her shamina before taking a tentative step forward. The pillared structure seemed to be a temple. Given the hour, it was no shock to see very few signs of life around her. Still, Scheherazade kept a hand near her dagger as she passed the pool and its copper pots of smoking incense, walking cautiously toward the wide set of stairs ahead. Her gait did not falter when a familiar figure appeared at the top of the staircase. He was quite tall and dressed in a cloak that fell to his feet in a chaos of colors. Leather mancalas were wrapped around each wrist. His head was completely shorn of hair, and his deep brown eyes glowed like beacons of warm light. "I was wondering when you would visit me." Musa Zaragoza grinned down at her, his smile bright. He held out his hands to her, signaling her up the stairs. A boy and a girl, near her age, materialized from behind the fire-capped columns to Musa's right. The girl raised a trio of tapers in a rosewood holder, the wax dripping in creamy rivulets beside her wrist. Both the boy and the girl were armed with short, hooked swords at their left hips. Scheherazade halted near the bottom step. Without a second thought, she reached for her dagger. Musa smiled broadly, his features smoothing in understanding. "You're among friends here, my star. I can assure you of precious little in this world, but in this, I can rest my life. Here, you are safe." "Forgive me, Musa Effendi," she said, though her fingers did not move from her side. "But there are times I forget what being safe feels like." He waved a dismissive hand. "There's nothing to forgive." Scheherazade's gaze flicked back to his silent sentries. "I hope I have not offended anyone or caused any undue trouble by coming here tonight." The girl's head of spiraling curls tilted in Scheherazade's direction, her eyes wide, inquisitive. The boy yawned, his stick-straight hair mussed on one side, as though he'd just risen from a nap. "You have caused no trouble. Parissa and Masrur are on guard duty this evening. As usual, Mas would rather be asleep, but Parissa's curiosity has won out over all else. She is quite fascinated, as she's heard a great deal about you." Musa laughed, and it crinkled the dark skin around his eyes. He glanced over his shoulder at the boy and girl in question. "I apologize for visiting in the middle of the night." Scheherazade offered them a wary grin as she started up the steps, her hand finally falling from her dagger. Parissa held her tapers high, illuminating the path for Scheherazade, while Mas remained as drowsy as ever. "We suspected you were on your way." Musa's smile turned knowing. "The stars told Parissa to expect a visitor late this evening, and she relayed the message to me earlier." Startled by this news, Scheherazade almost missed a step. "The stars?" Her eyes shot to the doe-eyed girl hovering on her left. "She can read the stars." Scheherazade had heard of those who could do such a thing, but she'd never had occasion to meet someone with this rare ability. Parissa was no longer looking at her. She was studying the carpet lashed to Scheherazade's back with a troublingly covetous gaze, one that gave Scheherazade decided pause. "Why don't you join us inside for some tea, and I will answer all of your questions," Musa said, his voice quiet and soothing, like a brook weaving between uneven stones. Scheherazade tarried a beat, her foot coming to rest on the final step. "I'm afraid I don't have time for tea. I must return before dawn breaks, before my absence is discovered." She swallowed, hoping to convey her need for discretion in nothing but a glance. "I see." The sharply attuned Magus nodded, though his eyes narrowed in question. "Is there something
I need your help, Musa Effendi.
She met him atop the staircase, squaring her shoulders without concern for pride or propriety.
For my father and for Khalid.
Unseemly though it was to begin with demands, Sherazad knew it could not be helped. She did not have time for anything more than complete candor. Neither did those she loved. Thankfully, Musa did not press further. He took her hand without the slightest pause.
What is it you need, my star?
At Sherazad's wordless behest, Musa relieved Parissa and Masrur from their posts and sent them to sleep. Moss gave her a grateful look, though Parissa appeared rather miffed. She eyed the magic carpet a final time before leaving, a trail of wax dribbling in her wake. Musa listened to Sherazad's story while sitting on the stone steps of the fire temple, his face stark. Only twice did his expression soften. Once when Sherazad mentioned her father's book, then again when he heard her speak of Khalid. The moment Sherazad confessed how much she'd come to care for Layla's son, the son who'd watched his beloved mother die at the hands of a cruel father, Sherazad suspected she had much more than an ally in the otherworldly Magus. After Sherazad finished her tale, Musa paused to ruminate on the dancing flames at the top of the marble column nearby.
"Did you know these things would come to pass?" Sherazad asked when she could stomach the silence no longer.
"Did Parissa read the stars and reveal my future?" He shook his head, a smile playing at the edges of his lips.
"That is not the way of it. Your future is not set in stone, my dearest star. A coin turns on itself a number of times before it lands."
Sherazad exhaled protractedly.
"How I wish I believed that were true, Musa Effendi. But recent events have proven it is not. Khalid's future appears to be set in stone, and with it, mine."
Musa leaned forward, his elbows settling upon his knees.
"So you've come here in hopes I might break this fearful curse."
"Is it possible?" she whispered, gripping the fabric of her trousers tightly.
"Alas." He gazed at her sadly. "Magic in our world can be a mysterious gift, one not so easily controlled and not without great cost. I have no notion of the magic that was used to enact this evil. And even if I did, there are not many powerful enough to fend off a curse. The most I could do is offer some kind of talisman to ward away Khalid's sleeplessness for a short time. But I am not powerful enough to counteract a curse, dearest one. The only way I know to break a curse is to fulfill it."
Sherazad's face fell, the bleakness taking hold.
"But I might be able to do more for your father," Musa continued, "especially with regard to the book he keeps with him. You said he has many burns on his hands, that this book gives off an unusual amount of heat."
"Yes, it nearly burned me when I came near it the other day." Sherazad's mouth thinned as she recalled the peculiar wave of heat she'd felt whenever she'd drawn close to the tome in her father's arms.
"And he spoke in an unfamiliar language when you found him on the hill outside Ray?"
Sherazad nodded. Musa pressed a forefinger to his lips in momentary contemplation.
"I know you are averse to involving anyone else in these matters, but I do feel as though we need to consult with another individual. Is there someone you know who might be able to help?"
A thread of hope tugged at Sherazad's heart.
"Perhaps there is someone here who may know more than I.
If my suspicions are correct, he would, at the very least, be able to answer questions about this book. Though it may prove to be an interesting task gathering answers from him.
Sherzad shifted uncomfortably, her palms resting against the cool stone beside her.
Can we trust him? Save you, I have told no one about the curse, and I do not wish to tell anyone else. Such information would be dangerous in the wrong hands.
Trust is an interesting matter when it comes to Artan. He will not give it to those who do not offer it first. In any case, I leave the decision to you.
Bemusement washed across his features for an instant, then vanished in a burst of certitude.
But regardless of your choice, he will not betray you, of that I am sure.
He rose from the steps and reached out a hand to her.
Come with me, my lady.
Sherzad trailed after Musa as he made his way down the steps, past the rectangular pool of water. Though she remained doubtful, she continued following the Magus as he walked toward the edge of the promontory. When he made a sharp turn near the brink of the cliff, another set of stairs emerged before them, descending into utter darkness. Carved straight from rock, they were jagged and precarious, without a railing, without any handholds to speak of. She assumed they led to the stretch of sand below, but she could not see exactly where, as the trail vanished in another sharp turn, a stone's throw away. A staircase that gave new meaning to Faith. One would think they'd have a torch nearby, especially at a fire temple. Unperturbed, Musa smiled back at her.
Would you rather use the magic carpet?
Or why not a bridge made of moonbeams? She grumbled. He laughed heartily and held out his hand for hers. Without a word, she let him lead her down the perilous stone steps into the cavernous void below. The sound of crashing waves grew louder as they neared the shoreline. At first, Sherzad could not fathom why they were crossing a dark beach in the dead of night. The shafts of moonlight dancing off the waves did not indicate the presence of any other besides her and the colorfully robed Magus before her. But as they crossed the ripples of sand, Sherzad noticed a small outcropping of rocks jutting into the sea. Stretched across a flat stone in its center was the lone figure of a young man. A small wave struck the base of the stone, bursting white spray into the air, drudging seawater onto his trousers. Yet the young man did not stir from his spot. Musa came to stand near the edge of the lapping water, a few paces from the boy. The Magus proceeded to wait, assuming a stance of serene silence. After a time, Sherzad grew impatient. The boy on the rocks was being quite rude to Musa Effendi, for he had to know they were there. The half-moon behind them cast their shadows onto his face, long and lean and unmistakably present. She coughed twice. Still, the boy did not move a muscle, save to blink and to sigh, which of course meant he was not dead. Scapegrace. Musa took in a great breath of briny air. Artan? The boy propped a foot on one knee and placed a hand beneath his head. Then he yawned loudly, prodigiously. Artan Temujin. Musa tried again. It was not a forceful entreaty. Clearly the Magus had the patience of 20 men, and the serenity of many enlightened souls. By contrast, Sherzad was tempted to shove the boy off the rock, to watch the waves toss him about for a while. But there was a possibility she would need his help. What happened next all but caused Sherzad to fall face first into the waves herself. The boy lifted a hand into the air above his chest. He twisted his fingers,
and a spinning ball of fire, the size of a fist, appeared above his open palm. He flicked the rapidly rolling blaze higher, so as to see Sherzad in a better light. Then he tossed the fireball into the waves with a flip of his wrist. It fizzled in the sea before disappearing in a whirl of white smoke. All the while, Sherzad could barely suppress a gasp. I will not be impressed by this scapegrace, no matter how impressive he may be. When the boy sat up, she noticed him sway to one side. He slid from the rock with a splash into knee-deep waters, before tipping over altogether with a wry chortle. He's drunk. Sherzad folded her arms, curbing her indignation. She glanced at Musa, who did not seem at all disturbed by the boy's condition. He seemed resigned, as though he'd expected as much. When the boy sat back and lifted his face into the starlight, Sherzad detected many things of note. Like Musa, the boy's head was completely bald. The lobes of both ears were pierced with small gold hoops. His skin was a light sable color, and his eyes were slow-shaped and elegantly hooded, distinctly of the Far East. He was not classically handsome, but he was striking in his own way, for his beauty lay in the sum of his faults. An all-too-prominent jaw, a nose broken and healed in several places, a diagonal scar through his lower lip. From where she stood, the rest of his skin looked as smooth as the surface of a looking glass. He wore no shirt and slender pants that had been fine many moons ago. Now they appeared tattered and without a care, just like the boy who wore them. Once he found his footing, Sherzad discovered he was not much taller than she, though his torso was wide. He was barrel-chested and strong. "She's pretty," the boy slurred with a slight accent. His mouth tugged to the side in a cutthroat grin. Without thinking, Sherzad returned one in kind. He let out a wild laugh.
"But not pretty enough."
"How fortunate your talents lie elsewhere, and that you are not a judge of beauty," she said with another biting smile.
"Ah," he held up a long forefinger. "But I am. I happen to be the preeminent judge of beauty this side of the Shanku River. There was a time I had to choose which of four enticing virgins was the most..."
"Artan?" Musa tisked, canyons of disapproval forming around his mouth. The boy laughed again, falling back into the water. He proceeded to float on an idling current, his arms outstretched and his legs spread wide. "He's drunk," Sherzad murmured through pursed lips, "and a liar."
"That's true," the boy didn't flinch. "They weren't virgins," he winked at her. "Though liar is a bit of a stretch. I merely enjoy embellishing the truth."
Musa rubbed a hand across his face.
"Please sit up for a moment. As a favor to me, act in a manner befitting your heritage."
At that, the boy let out another overly emphatic round of laughter. "I'm sorry, Musa Effendi, but he is not in a state to provide us with any help, and I do not have time to wait." Sherzad turned on a heel, frustrated she'd even hoped to gain assistance from such a lazy, rude boy. "Sherzad John," the boy lurched to his feet in a squelch of seawater.
"That cheeky snipe is the Khalifa of Khorasan?"
It was the first sign of a frank reaction to anything they'd said thus far.
"He knows who I am."
Sherzad turned back to the boy.
"And just who are you?" she asked, her fists on her hips. "Artan Temujin."
Though he nearly toppled over in the process, the boy gave her a taunting bow. She hooked a slender brow at him, trying to invoke some restraint.
"Who is that exactly?" Give me your hand and I'll tell you.
Sly treachery laced his every word.
I'd sooner kiss a snake.
Smart girl, he laughed.
But you've kissed a murdering madman.
Beads of water rolled down his barreled chest.
Is that not the same thing?
You... Sherazad started after him, no longer able to contain herself. With a satisfied smirk, Artan yanked her into the water beside him. Torn off her feet, she caught herself on his left arm. Several things stunned her all at once. He was overly warm, as though he were quite fevered, despite his recent stint by the sea. Up close, the skin of his palms was rough and calloused, and one of his forearms was monstrously scarred. Just like Baba's hands. But the most startling thing of all was the jolt that raced through her blood at his touch, almost akin to the sensation of the carpet, a crackling around her heart that flashed through the whole of her.
Well, well, well.
Artan paused, his dark eyes boring holes into hers. It appears you are not wrong, Musa Abaga. Sherazad thought she heard the Magus sigh behind them.
Take your hands off me, she bit out at Artan, determined not to show how unnerved she felt.
When he failed to relinquish his hold, she shoved his chest. He tilted to the side before grasping her wrists in one of his hands.
What a temper! He laughed appreciatively. I should warn you, little snipe. The last girl who tried to thrash me into submission found her sight quite addled the next day.
Artan beckoned her closer, as though she had a choice.
I made her eyes point in two different directions.
Ha! Sherazad snorted. In order to achieve such a feat, would you not need to stand straight first?
You should truly be afraid on the days I can stand straight. Why, there was a time I put to rout an entire fleet of...
Enough! Sherazad pushed him away. I tried to be patient with you, since Musa Effendi said you might be of assistance. But I no longer believe that to be possible. Just answer this one question, and I'll leave you in peace. Do you, or do you not, know anything about a book that burns to the touch?
Artan blinked, taken off guard. What does it look like?
Old, battered, bound in rusted iron and dark leather.
With a lock around its center?
He cleared his throat, still fighting for focus.
Yes.
He paused. When deep creases appeared across the even skin of his forehead, Artan seemed almost fierce, dangerous.
Has someone opened it?
Under his abruptly severe gaze, Sherazad suppressed the need to shudder.
I think my father may have.
Does your father speak Chagatai?
I don't know.
That must wound your pride to admit, Artan said, his tone derisive.
Sherazad looked away, a flush creeping up her neck.
I should accept his criticisms for now.
Is your father an idiot? He continued.
No! Outraged into temporary speechlessness, Sherazad merely stared at him.
Only an idiot would open a book like that, Artan said, cold and merciless.
It's old, dark magic. Blood magic, the kind you pay for many times over, if your idiot father hasn't paid already.
Sherazad turned to Musa. Why would this horrid boy be...
My ancestors wrote that book. Artan interrupted without a trace of the smugness Sherazad would have expected from such an admission.
If your father is in trouble, my family are among the only ones who will know what to do.
Her heart shuddered to a stop.
Holy Hera, he may actually be of help.
Sherazad worried the inside of her cheek.
she might have pressed her luck too far already with Artan Temujin. Khalid was right. My mouth never ceases to cause me woe. Shahrazad knew she had to try to win this scapegrace over, despite her behavior thus far. When she glanced at the boy standing across from her, he was watching her with